Hey everyone, welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience. Today's episode is an interview Gary did on CoinDesk, talking all things NFTs, intellectual property, and more. We hope you enjoy.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Gary, how's it going?
It's going well, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Of course, I'm happy to talk to you. So let's just start with, I think the easiest place to get started is you've obviously, I think most of the people listening know you as kind of, you were one of the earlier people on the internet age of in e-commerce. You're selling wine online. You've been an incredible angel investor. You have an advertising agency, among many other things. You've kind of built up a great reputation for yourself. And more recently, you've become a big proponent of NFTs. So let's just start with that. I'm sure you get this question a lot, but what is an NFT?
It's a digital asset, non-fungible token, not interchangeable the way monies are, Ethereum, Bitcoin, fiat. But for me, what an NFT really is, the real actual answer is, I think Web 1.0 digitalized information, Joe. You know, I'm old, not like you as a youngster. I remember when it just blew my mind that I could go to Ask Jeeves or Dogpile or Yahoo, type in something about a wine and not have to go like to the bookshelf and pull out and take 15 minutes to figure out an Alsatian white wine's, growing season, where it was just sitting on the internet, organized, digitalized information. Web 2.0, where I really made my hay, especially off the pattern recognition of Web 1.0, was the digitalization of socialization, right? Like dating and communicating, and stakes are high on that. Communication obviously is such a human thing. Web 3 for me, as somebody who dabbled early and bought Bitcoin and Ethereum back in 14, 16, I've been watching. But last fall and winter, when I started to see the NFT thing, I'm like, right, this is the digitalization of goods. This is Farmville. This is Fortnite. This is NBA 2K, not Top Shot. This is, I live in this world digitally, and the things in it is an economy no different than a Mercedes-Benz or a Picasso or wearing a Gucci bag is in real life. These are assets, but really what they are is communication, social signaling, and we might be at the place now where the digital asset stream on this ledger that is very public, not like the real world, not counterfeitable. And so for me, what really got me crazy about the NFT infrastructure was not like I can own a Beeple or a LeBron NBA Top Shot or a CryptoPunk. But that is the case. Yes, I want that asset. It's that my spidey senses that have been really good for me my whole life around what humans are gonna do about it and how we're gonna play in this ecosystem with two decades from now, the metaverse, VR, and all the things that are looming made a lot of sense to me in the macro. However, and then we'll move on, I think the macro of NFTs have me extremely excited. The micro reminds me of internet stocks in 99. There's gonna be a lot of NFTs. And so yeah. I think this is a very interesting time that everybody who's watching here, and if you're watching this, you're in it, right? I think people still forget that 99% of the world's not in this conversation yet, for real. They may have heard about it at this point, but they're not in it. I think there's gonna be some remarkable investing, buying, trading opportunities, but I think a lot of things will not end up being worth as much as they are today 5 years from now, because the sheer amount of supply, I am actually struggling to figure out why in the future any business or human or person wouldn't issue NFTs. Forget about why they would. The question becomes why they wouldn't. So it's a digital asset that has an underlining capability of having a smart contract, which incredibly intensifies the value of it, almost like a ticket, right? A ticket is a piece of cardboard, but actually there's something going on with that ticket. It became usable for that event. Oh, by the way, if you go to eBay right now and try to buy a ticket stub from the Beatles Shea Stadium performance, which was legendary, there's an intrinsic secondary value on that. And I think you'll see a lot of that behavior play out over the next 50 years.
Yeah, that's a super interesting point, because I've heard it before, and I think it's something we can all probably agree on, is like there's a lot of people moving into the market now, whether it's creating NFTs themselves or companies to distribute them or marketplaces or whatever it might be. But I'm curious, one of my thoughts on this is really that we've never had in history kind of where technology and intellectual property met in a free market, right? So you're going to have some sort of price discovery with that. So I'm curious around your thoughts of kind of like how you think that'll shake out, the overvaluing of things now, maybe things are undervalued, and how you see kind of price trending over time.
I think we've already seen, forget about Ethereum's price. Pretend Ethereum is still $4,200 like it was a couple weeks ago. Because I want to shelf that because I don't want to confuse it. I think we've already seen it. You've had individuals like Ron Gronkowski and Patrick Mahomes and Steve Aoki and others move quickly and get Blau, who's a real OG, get extraordinary value. You've already now in the last 3 weeks have the Ellen DeGeneres, the Dame Lillards, the M&Ms come out and not. You know, one would argue the three names that I mentioned last are stronger outside of Mahomes than the names I mentioned first. So I think already you've had the market say, oh, wait a minute, everybody's gonna have an NFT. There's gonna be Pokemon NFT. There's gonna be UFC NFT. There's gonna be LeBron James exclusive at Novak Djokovic, the US Open, Budweiser, like Nike. Like, I view this like social media accounts. So I thought in 2008, and even going back earlier, but when I wrote Crush It, everyone's gonna have a social media account, because there's not going to be a reason not to. And if you read the early, Joe, reviews on Amazon of Crush It, everybody's saying the things they say about NFTs now. They're like, this book's stupid. I'm not going to have one. I'm not going to have one. And so I think people have taken in, oh, wait a minute, or at least the early movers and investors and traders have said, wait a minute, let me take a step back. I have to anticipate an extraordinary amount of supply. No different than social media accounts, Joe. You know how many social media accounts there are? That doesn't mean that Charlie D'Amelio and Logan Paul, you and your bro and others can't come across and do things and win. It just doesn't mean that everybody's gonna win, right? What I love is the democracy of it, right? Like there's artists right now that would have never had professional careers that are gonna start next week and win. They weren't first, they were just best at building a Discord community or whatever it takes to be successful. But you know what? I think we've already seen a correction, a very quick one, very quickly. And now the question becomes, who's going to do the best job with the underlining contracts? Who's going to do the best job with their launch strategies, which I think are incredibly important, Joe? And how is it going to actually play out? What's going to end up happening is people are going to make some really bad decisions. There's projects right now, if you go to Crypto Slam, that are doing quite well, that are absolutely destined to be a penny on the dollar in 12 years. On the flip side, there's some stuff that's, whether it's CryptoPunks as an obvious one, given how intense that intellectual property is for the NFT world, or something just, I'm going to actually click cryptos. I'm just going to pick something up on Wax or something real quick, just for fun. Here's the last 24 hours, something, cart bombs, right? Cardo bombs, right? Like 525 or Godzilla or Cyber Kongs, right? $348 in secondary transactions in the last 24 hours. Well, if the people that control that intellectual property, Joe, have the talents of the Pokemon, Hello Kitties, Transformers, well then that's sitting for pennies on its value in 12 years. This is going to be a game of building out the intellectual property, not just issuing an NFT. You know, in 2008, people came up to me, they're like, Gary, I have a social media account. I'm like, congrats. They thought just by having one that all these amazing things were going to happen. I think that's what's happening with NFTs. And I think the people buying them, if they're buying them not because they love them, which is a whole nother genre, I've met thousands of people who are buying this no different than being someone who collects comic books, sneakers, keychains, little miniature elephants, dolls. People collect, Joe. Almost everybody's got a relative that collects something, you know, that is sometimes magnets. How many people have to, you know, people collect everything. Garfield, remember Garfield? People collect everything. Yeah. So you'll have that ecosystem. As far as people thinking of it as an asset, I think that there's going to be some major home runs, but I think those are going to be needles in the haystack right now. And I think the people have great intellectual property that do a great job being crypto native and launch great projects have a real opportunity in 2020. That's what I'm going to be looking out for in 2022. The Disneys, yep. The Pokemons, the Godzillas, the Tiger Woods, like who's going to really do it well coming in with heat? That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so that brings me up into my next point. So part of this conversation is going to be centered around kind of the psychology of investors looking at digital assets versus physical collectibles, right, historically. And I like to group them in kind of two buckets, which is people that have done well have highly engaged audiences and they have great creative on the digital collectible space. But the ones that haven't performed really well kind of stop there. And the ones that have performed really well usually have some type of special access or a utility of some type that's desirable, right? So how do you think of that? And maybe this can kind of lead us into your new project, VFriends.
And let me add the third one, which is actually the answer of VFriends. One of the reasons I did the conference and some of the access was I was watching a lot of people with big audiences just do an app, just do it JV with a digital artist. So I was like, you know what? Yep. I'm aware, you know, I'm self-aware. I know people are watching what I'm doing. And so let me show Novak Djokovic. I'm a fan. Hopefully Novak sees this and his NFT project isn't outsourcing some digital artist to do a good picture of him. It's having a golden racket that lets you hit with him because I would want that. You know, like That's cool. So believe it or not, VFriends didn't start out with VCon, the 3-year conference that came with it or all the other stuff. It was a reaction to what I was seeing in the marketplace and knowing that I thought I could add to the community. What it started out as is what I would say is the third bucket, Joe. I believe that in these next 36 months, four, that is gonna be a random number, whether it's one or 12, I don't know, but I'm gonna use the number four. Let me use five, it's my favorite number. Five, meaningful intellectual properties will be NFT native and then built up. So Transformers was a toy that used cartoons as an 80s vehicle propaganda machine to build a toy business that later, in essence, we're sitting here now all these years later, we both recognize as a $1 billion intellectual property. Pokemon used a card game similar to Magic the Gathering because they saw that thing brewing as the starting point, Joe, to something that has now become one of the most, if not the most valuable intellectual property in the world. Star Wars, Joe, used movies. Harry Potter used books to build these multi-billion dollar intellectual properties. So I think, Joe, everyone's talking about just the asset collectible. Now we're starting to see, and VFriends definitely did that, and you're gonna start seeing, I'm already hearing a lot of rumblings, which I'm excited. I feel nice to be part of the lineage. People have stopped their projects and they're starting to make it more thoughtful with access and events, and that's great, because that was always the promise of NFTs. The OGs that were way before me, that I pay the most respect to, they always, I mean, Blau himself wanted, you know, did a concert. Like, this has been there. They've been waiting for this. You know, VFriends is one execution. But I'll tell you what I think is the big one. The big one is the thing I just said, that I believe the real craziness opportunity is building a Power Rangers, is building a Smurfs, is building a Raggedy Ann or a God willing or a Disney. You know, when I look at, for example, Bored Ape, right? That, you know, there's an NFT project called Bored Ape Yacht Club. You know, when I look at it, I'm like, do I think that this can become Bape? Do I think this can become, you know, WWE? Do I think, like, that's how I look at things. Because if they can, Joe, you can imagine two things happens. One, that's highly incentive oriented for the people issuing it. I'm very excited about the revenue that VFriends did, which was quite a bit, especially when ETH was at a better price. But I'm pouring that back into an animation studio, into employees. I've got 555 gift goats, which is part of my project where I have to send people physical gifts 6 times a year for 3 years. And then the real expense, 3 mega conferences that I have to put on. What I'm far more excited about is if I can make Patient Panda Mickey Mouse, well then that's a real legacy. That's really cool. If I can make Empathy Elephant, you know, Bugs Bunny, I've really got something. If I can make Accountable Ant Wonder Woman, I've really got something. And I actually predict, which I don't like to do, but I predict that, you know, in 15 years from now, I'll clip, you know how I like to clip old clips, Joe? It'll be me and you right here, and it's gonna be because Karen created the new Hello Kitty, and it started as an NFT project, which for me as a collector is really exciting because, you know, now to, could you imagine if you were able to buy the original Mickey Mouse cell? Because that's what I'm saying, right? You could have actually bought the original, if this was now and Walt Disney was now, that first drawing of Mickey Mouse, it actually was an NFT. And somebody actually owns that. That's just extraordinary to think through.
Yep. Yeah, and on top of that,
Walt might have not given up the intellectual property, but that is a collectible asset. Jeez Louise, I mean, who knows what that could be? Not to mention, for everybody who's thinking to innovate here and start IP, if Walt made a 10% commission on that, imagine today, just play it out. It's so easy to put the pieces together. Today it's 2067. Today at Sotheby's, you know, the original Mickey Mouse NFT was sold for $31 million. Well, in that scenario, Disney Inc. makes $3.1 million on royalty. Today, when all these, when the Honus Wagner sold last night, you know, the tobacco company didn't get it. When I buy a Michael Jordan rookie card for, you know, $350,000, Fleer Inc. doesn't get $35,000. That is the destiny of the intellectual property launchers of the future. That's a very, very, very substantial thing, which is incentivizing people. This is why I don't understand what people are doing, Joe. You are unbelievably incentivized as an issuer of an NFT to do extraordinary things for your community and the IP because you are tied in to the value of it in perpetuity.
Yep.
I only want to invest in NFTs that have royalty components for the original person because I know she or he's going to be massively incentivized to keep it going.
Yep. And so Gary, that's actually a good point. You talk about kind of the Fleer Michael Jordan rookie, right? And everyone I think knows that you're into kind of the physical trading card space as well. And I think sometimes people get a little confused on if the digital space evolves over time and it becomes more popular, how does that impact the physical card space, right? Like why is that interaction kind of beneficial and where do you think that goes over time?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of and both. I'm stunned by all the conversations the last 6 months of everyone being in the, well, I'm not stunned. Humans love ore. Joe, they love ore. People love ore. They feel like everything's a winner takes all. Everyone's in such a funny mindset around this. I think it works because A, all of this is alternative investments. Let's just start with that. The psyche of being into Top Shot and being into Fleer is coming out of me buying Tesla stock or buying a piece of an apartment or buying an antique at Sotheby's. This is coming from places. This is, you know, people are shifting into what I would call more happiness alternative investing. You know, like for me, it's so much more fun to own a Bill Russell 1957 Topps asset than it is to buy a apartment that I'm renting out as a good use of my money or even buying 1,000 shares of Netflix. Because I don't know, I don't get to see it. Like it's cool, it's fine, but it's much more neat to do this. Plus it's tradable, plus it's social currency, right, Joe? Like I think that's the thing that people, you know. So my belief is that people flow back and forth. Right now, you had this extreme explosion on both fronts of NFTs and sports cards and alternative investments, sneakers, video games, all this stuff is moving. There's a lot of money in the system, right? There's, you know, COVID. But I think this was all inevitable because you have a generation of people in their 30s and 40s that are coming into that phase of their lives when they start investing. And I think a lot of us were incredibly affected by the 80s and 90s pop culturalization. It was just such a big part of our life. You know, we were the generation that really collected cards, really, you know, played with video games. We're really affected by, you know, intellectual properties. And I think, you know, I don't know the 46-year-old that's fired up to go to a Sotheby's auction and buy a teacup from 1847. But I think to answer your question, I just don't see how it's not going to be both. And I think I genuinely do think they feed each other. Now, I do think, you know, I do think what you've seen over the last 4 months is the rise of NFTs, NBA Top Shot, and others probably took some steam out of physical cards. But then I think it goes both ways, right? As Top Shot balances out, as Ethereum balances out, like, you know, like I, for one, like looked at the Golden Auction last night very aggressively and like can't wait for the Sports Card National Convention in the last week of July, and like want to be a person that zigs and zags, right? While everyone's going over here, all right, let me do this. And then everyone comes here. Okay, let me, like, zigging and zagging is always, it's just supply and demand dynamics. But yeah, I don't think, and then contemporary artists have been driving me crazy. They are trying to shit on NFT artists. I'm like, you don't understand, this is good. Like, let me talk about me. As I'm getting sucked into thinking some NFT art is cool, I, for the first time, Joe, I'm like, oh, I want to buy some actual art. First time. Completely based on me looking at NFTs. So, yeah, I think people think in scarcity too much and are always scared. I think they need to embrace. And if I'm an intellectual property or if I'm a artist, I'm trying to be omni-channel. It's both. I'm going to do NFTs and physical. You know, and I think that's an important way to think about it.
Yeah, and I'd agree. I like the way you phrased it with kind of how you think about digital art and real art, right? You're interested in getting physical art now because of that kind of connection. And I like to think that trading cards is the same thing, right? If you go in and you buy a physical or a digital trading card, hey, maybe some of those people fall out and they say, NFTs aren't really for me. I'm not that interested. I don't get it. But then they fall down and some of that naturally escapes into the kind of traditional trading card set. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
I'm really excited for my first significant trade in 2022 when it's like, three of these digital things and one physical thing in exchange for four digit, like it's gonna happen because it's omni, it's just here.
Yep. And you've talked about social currency there before. And I've heard you mention before, like kind of the idea of what would you pay to be verified on Instagram? What would you pay to be verified on Twitter? And there's obviously a cost kind of associated with that, whether people want to admit it or not, right? But how do you think of kind of social currency, but especially in kind of the aspect of a generational gap, right? So someone older may not really care about it that much or say they don't care about it and not get it. And then someone younger, as kind of the population ages, how do you think NFTs play a role in that?
That the older generation will be playing in 3 years and people don't see that. This is what happened. Everyone said, Gary, you're right about Facebook. One day these 18-year-olds are going to be 39. I'm like, no. These 18-year-olds are gonna become 26. They're gonna have a child. They're gonna post the photo on social and grandma's gonna create an account to see it. This is gonna become so prevalent over the next decade that when the hottest restaurant in New York City requires you to buy an NFT to even get in, the 58-year-old on the Upper West Side's buying that damn NFT. Like, I don't understand how people have not seen this. It's happened for 20 years. Generations resist because it's new, and then they have to succumb because it's true. I remember when the iPhone came out, I was like, this is insane. I'm on the internet at the mall, at a Jets game. And I started to tell every single person I knew, I'm like, you're going to get one of these. And they were like, no way, the BlackBerry, I don't even have to look when I type. I'm like, you don't get it. You will have one of these. And that's been about online dating. That's been about iPhones. That's been about social media. You know, I don't think this is a game, Joe, of like, okay, the Fortnite kids and the Roblox kids are going to be 36 and they'll do NFTs and they'll become real. I think this is a game of businesses and human beings and individuals and organizations are going to start issuing NFTs because it's smart. And then people are going to be forced into it. I'll give you an example. Let's just use Cuban because he's Cuban. If the Mavericks in 3 years only issued their tickets in NFT form, and you're a 61-year-old enthusiast fan of the Mavericks and a season ticket holder, you're converting to an NFT. Just like QR codes, just like apps, just like email. Everybody has fought every technology, Joe. And what always happens is the world doesn't care about your old feelings. The cat's out of the bag. You know, things may come and go. It might not be Ethereum, Polkadot may, like, Flow, you know, Cardano. Like, I don't know the blockchains, but I can tell you right now, I just don't see a world where NFTs are not part of our society in 20 years. And I want to start putting down the foundations of being a part of that.
Yeah, so I'd like to transition for a second to how this kind of impacts the world of professional sports, right? And you mentioned Mark Cuban. He's been a proponent of saying that the Mavericks are looking into ways to put the kind of their ticket system on the blockchain and be able to track resale prices and accept future revenue on the resale prices and stuff like that. The Charlotte Hornets did digital collectibles for people who attended games rather than a physical bobblehead or something like that. There's obviously NBA Top Shot that has been extremely successful. And what I think that's really shown is that the NBA has historically undervalued their intellectual property, right? There's obviously been an additional price put on top of that, and it's become a massive revenue generator for the league and Dapper Labs and everyone associated with it. But I'm curious, kind of, where do you see the most value within professional sports going forward for, we'll call it leagues, teams, players, whatever it might be?
I mean, I think that this will be bigger revenue than the TV rights. Joe, I think that for a long time pre-internet, the distributor had all the leverage. The movie theater distributor, the network, right? I think that now with a mature internet for communication and a growing blockchain, and you know, actions over words, Joe. I have 8 trillion videos on the internet saying that I built VaynerMedia to buy intellectual property and I'm gonna refurbish it and go, right?
Yep.
I also just issued my own intellectual property 2 weeks ago. This is going to be the greatest era of intellectual property ownership. And that could be anything. That's the artist, the creator wins now. And so the NBA and the MLB and everybody else, all the leagues that start from this and anybody who's got Raggedy Ann and Bugs Bunny, this is going to be the golden era these next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. I really believe that. And so where does it go? The rights fights are going to be remarkable. Think about what this all leads to. You could see this leading to the NBA disbanding because the 20 top players in 10 years feel they have too much leverage and the economics are too high, so they're going to start their own league. Like, I mean, this is the biggest shift in human behavior ever. A mature communications internet, and soon to be, in a decade, a mature asset, digital asset infrastructure that will live with each other and completely rewrite all the rules of society. I really believe that. And so, you know, I impose with passion everybody who's lucky enough to be watching this, which means you're brilliant. I think anybody watching this, Joe, doesn't realize how far ahead they are. If you're watching this conference right now, you are so far ahead of the 8 billion humans. Please don't let this information you're sitting on sit wasted. Get thoughtful and try to think about what you're going to do with IP, because that digital asset's going to be worth something. And I think for sports, it's enormous, just absolutely enormous. These Messi and LeBron thinks they made a lot of money with brand deals. Wait till they realize what happens when they own the entire ecosystem.
Yep. Yeah. And I think we've seen, I was going to say, I know you've invested in So Rare. So there's different platforms kind of coming out for different sports and stuff like that. So it's certainly,
and by the way, Joe,
from there.
Real quick, as you know, 1948, Jackie Robinson's rookie card was made by a company called Leaf. Today, that company is a nice player, but not like issuing baseball. Like, so, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to think through is like, okay, so Rare did the first proper football, proper execution. So cool. So Rare may not be the company in 12 years. And by the way, I wrote a $25,000 check into So Rare. I was like a add-on at the end. I bought a single So Rare asset for more than my investment in the whole platform. This is right now I'm in learning mode, right? I want to taste these things, but this goes back to, are there deals right now? So, you know, a lot of the things we see right now are the original thing. So in 17 years, maybe that Patrick Mahomes thing started expensive. This is my bet. Then collapses because of supply and demand. But then in 17 years, it's like, wait a minute, that was the original. And so there's so much, you know, all my garage sailing, all my baseball card shows. I also was heavy in my childhood in comic books and collectible toys, knowing what a blue Snaggletooth that was only available in Sears department stores, Cantina exclusives for Star Wars toys in 1978. All that knowledge now plays out because it's all human psychology. And it all goes back to the same thing, Joe. Why does somebody drive a Tesla? Why does somebody need to wear a sweater that says Gucci? Why Rolex? Why off-white Nikes? Why do you mow your lawn? We are social signaling as it is inherently in a human. Just like animals, you watch those Discovery Channels and they flap their wings or they stand up straight. We communicate, and I believe digital assets, NFTs, will be the most significant way that human beings communicate in the decades to come, and that's why the stakes are high.
Yep. Yeah. I know we only have about 20 seconds here left. So I just wanted to say kind of one of the reasons why I always kind of am excited to watch your content and was extremely excited to talk to you in a forum like this is because you're one of the guys that, sits on the sideline for a little bit, learns a lot, educates himself, and then comes out when he believes in something is super passionate. So I certainly learned a lot today. I hope other people did too. So thanks for doing this, Gary.
Thank you, Joe. As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness, I'm going to have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks, Gary. Today's amazing 5-star review reads, "These podcasts will influence the next level the human race goes to. When Gary V repeats himself thousands of times, he states his truth. Compassion, empathy, love, kindness, willingness, perseverance, tenacity, passion, and much, much more. But what I think is the most important idea he has shared is not caring what other people think. Truly not caring what others think. It's so easy to say, but so hard to do. Much love, G." Thank you so much for that kind review. And to anybody listening out there, if you leave us a review like that, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.